I'm going to send Chris the link to the site. We have the experiencethebigbook.org. Some people subscribe to the podcast, I noticed, but on experiencethebigbook.org, I do have thoughts on recovery, and I have resources, and we have the spiritual checklist. I'm going to add the handout I gave on the world of alcoholism and the world of the spirit, so people can download that, and we're going to be using that at a lot of the meetings. Today we're on the preamble, and we're going to do the ABCs, and then we're going to start on the third step. And I think these pages cannot be read enough. And I must have read them, I don't know, who knows how many times, but I got something new out of them. Today we're only going to cover 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs in one sentence. And I'll try not to talk for more than 2 hours. That wasn't a joke. We're on page 60. And we finished, I covered the ABCs on Wednesday. And that podcast, I think it'll be worth listening to. It'll be out next week. We're usually a week behind. Lyle downloads them. It says at the end of what we read, how it works, it says our description of the alcoholic. So can you describe your alcoholic? Can you describe yourself? And then the chapter to the agnostic is where we find the power to relieve us of being an alcoholic, right? And our personal adventures before and after, before we came to a relationship with God and after our relationship with God. And make 3 pertinent ideas. Now, pertinent is very, it means relevant, very important. And these ABCs really are the talk about what it means to be recovered. Now, and when we read them at every meeting, we listen to them, but do we say them about ourselves? That we were alcoholic. Are you an alcoholic? Am I an alcoholic? And it says we were alcoholic. Notice it doesn't say they're alcoholic. We were alcoholic. And because they could have said that we are alcoholics. And what does it mean to be a were alcoholic versus an alcoholic? Well, that's what they're talking about, recovered. And an alcoholic is someone who cannot stop drinking. And once they drink, they can't control it. Anybody have that problem in this room?
Yeah.
And they were not obsessed and bound to drinking anymore. Doesn't mean they were recovered, but they were in a situation where they were in a position of neutrality towards the disease of alcoholism. And it didn't last for a lot of them because they did relapse. It's a fragile situation, but it's one where you're not dominated today by the idea you need a drink. Isn't that a gift? And that's what it means to be recovered. Now, it doesn't mean that you won't drink today, but it means that you have some relationship with a power greater than yourself, and you're seeking that relationship, and you're not dominated by alcohol today. Anybody remember when you were dominated? It wasn't good, was it? And it beat us, and could not manage our own lives, that they were, and they could not manage their own lives. I cannot manage my own life. And if I cannot manage my own life, when I try to do it, what happens? I have actions and emotions that are bad. And when I have bad actions and negative emotions, then the obsession to drink comes into play. And so I can't live sober and manage my life and not drink. Can anybody else do that? I couldn't do it. I couldn't live sober managing my life and not be obsessed with finding something to relieve me of living sober without God. Did anybody else have that problem? Because that's what the problem is. It's not alcohol. We don't need to drink if we have God. But if we don't have God and we're running our lives, then alcohol became a solution. But it stopped working. Did it stop working for anybody in this room? Stopped working at the end, right? And we were at that hopeless point. But they weren't there. They were alcoholic, and they knew they could not manage their own lives. They understood that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Ed likes to quote page 43. It says, we are without defense against the first drink unless we have a higher power. Now, the book takes us, took 60 pages of doctor's opinion to get us to the point that I can understand that no human power can relieve my alcoholism. So recovered is when your alcoholism is relieved. And it's relieved by God. Now, what is alcoholism? Relieved, I'm not alcoholic today in terms of the obsession, the drink, and I'm not dominated by the alcohol. I can still manage my life today if I choose, but I'm seeking God not to do that. And then, like Cliff said, we live in step 10, 11, so we try not to do that. And no human power can relieve my alcoholism. So alcoholism is a disease of sobriety, and I cannot relieve it myself. And now we're going to read in the next three pages what that really means, what it means to be living in alcoholism. And alcoholism is sober without God and how your life looks. And then the solution to alcoholism we named after alcohol. Alcohol was not our problem, it was our solution. The problem is it didn't work. It wasn't a really good treatment for what we had. Now, before AA, there was no treatment for what I had, but this AA program gave us 12 steps that can treat that. Does this make sense? And so we have a treatment now for alcoholism, and we can be relieved from it. And so when I say recovered, I mean that I'm seeking God today. I have a relationship with Him. I'm going to pray, meditate, and inventory, and hopefully I won't seek alcohol as a solution. I'm going to seek God. And then here's a promise that God could and would if He were sought. Could and would. It doesn't say He may and may want to. He could and would, and all I have to do is seek Him. So we become God seekers in AA. Now, why do we want to seek God? Because only God can relieve my alcoholism. I have to seek God all day long so I'm not managing my own life. And then if I'm not managing my own life, I don't have to worry about drinking today. Now, none of us go through the day and don't manage our life. So we learn in AA steps 4 through 9 are designed to teach me how it looked when I'm managing my life and what happened. So in step 10, I have tools now that I can go through the day, and when Larry said emotions, when I start getting fear or angry or judgmental, I have power now with God to stop and change. And I can do that all day long. What a gift. So these ABCs really described a recovered person. You're seeking God, you have been relieved of the obsession of the mind, and you're trying not to manage your own life. Now, they take 60 pages before they get into what's really wrong with me. See, people come in here and they think alcohol's their problem, right? Well, not usually. If you really talk to a new person and they're honest, they have a list of about 50 people that got them here. And some of them need to be executed immediately. Immediate execution. And that would solve all my problems, right? And we're laughing, but it's true. We don't understand. And I think that's the problem in a lot of the meetings. People don't know what their problem is in terms of what makes them an alcoholic. And then they don't understand what alcoholism really is. And they're going to talk about it right now. So they're going to say, being convinced that I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life, being convinced that no power can relieve me of this disease I have, and God couldn't would if He were sought, then I'm at step 3. Now, in the original book, you know what it said? If you're not convinced at this point, reread the book or throw it away. Now, they took that out. I don't know that that's really bad. Probably should have left it in. Yeah, it's in the original manuscript. And in the original, and the other thing that's a problem, and I'll rewrite the book when I have a chance, is that yeah, you know, I have alcoholism, so we're going to read about my problem now too, and Mark will comment on it and describe it to, in detail. But the thing is that they talk about we, which is good, but it's really I. It's me. And the pages we're going to read now have to be read in the first person to really be effective. Because the big book actually asks you a series of questions. Every line is a question. They'll tell you something, and then you're supposed to say, now, does this apply to me? Is this my experience? Because it's a testimony. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to say, we're going to decide, make a decision. Now, a decision's important. What does a decision mean? It means that you're saying to yourself that I'm going to do something. Right? Now, we made a lot of decisions before we came to AA, and they were not good, weren't they? We decided to drink. Anybody think that was a bad decision? We decided to run our own lives. Anybody make mistakes running your own life, make bad decisions? So now we're going to start, and we're going to make the first good decision. This is really the first decision in the steps. We don't decide we're an alcoholic. We experience it. That's where people... We don't study the book to learn if I'm an alcoholic. They describe alcoholism, and then do you have it or not? And if you have it or not, and you're convinced, now you're at step three. So you're going to decide to turn. Now, turn is a powerful word. It's used in the big book several times. It's a very spiritual term. You're going to turn away from something. I'm going to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions, over to God. So I'm going to turn away from me. There's two doors in my mind all the time. One's me and the other's God. Now the God door was very small when I came in here. I didn't even see it all the time. The me door was wide open. And now what we want to do is go from the me door to the God door and open it and use that power. When I opened the me door, I had my power. You don't want to live the way I lived. And I want to live the way God wants me to. So there's two powers in my brain. And which one am I going to choose today? And we turn it over to God as we understood him. Now, I would suggest that whatever you think you understand of God, that be a power that you can turn your life and will over to. And you can trust that power. The other thing I suggest is that it be all powerful. It be all powerful. You don't want 90% power. You want 100% power. And you want that power to be dominating your life, not you. And it says, just what do we mean by this and just what do we do? So they're going to ask you a question. You're convinced of the ABCs, which means basically you're screwed without God. And you can't go on the way you are. You have a hopeless and futile situation, right? So now you're going to make a decision that I don't want to be in a hopeless, futile situation. I'm going to seek God. And it says, just what do we mean by that and what do we do? So they're going to tell you, what do you mean by turning your life and your will over to God? Now, they're going to give you the first, and the other thing about this, if you look at this line, it's decide, turn, mean. And then it says, do. So it's a sequence. So they're going to say the first requirement. So you've come to AA. You understand you're an alcoholic. You know what it means. You believe that God can help you because what you see in the rooms. And then you make a decision that you're going to seek this power, right? But before that, you have to have a requirement. Now, I think this is why a lot of alcoholics die. Because they can't be convinced of this requirement enough to see the truth of it. We can give lip service to, but can we see the reality of it? And we have to be convinced that I'm running my life on self-will can hardly be a success. And I have to be convinced of this. That means I cannot have any doubt. So what does it mean to have a life on self-will? Well, self-will means stubborn or willful adherence to one's own desires or ideas. Anybody think that ever applied to them? Stubborn or willful adherence. You're sticking to something. You're stubborn and to something, and it's your own desires and ideas. And here's another one. Persistent carrying out of one's own will or wishes, especially when in conflict with others. So we want what we want, right? When we want it, and we want it done the way we want. Anybody else have that problem? So that's self-will. Now, who decides that you have self-will? When you wake up in the morning, who decides that you're going to have stubborn or willful adherence to your own ideas? You do. So you come in here and you blame all these people you want to execute, but you have made a decision every day, a stubborn and willful one, that your own desires or ideas are going to dominate your life. And what they're saying is, if you do that, and you do that every day, the result is your life is going to be unmanageable and you will drink. So you're going to have to stop living that way. You have to be convinced that that way of life cannot work for you. Now they're going to describe what it looks like. It says, on that basis, a basis where you're running your life on self-will, we are almost in collusion with someone, something or somebody, and I love this one, even though our motives are good. All right, so I'm running the world, I'm in collusion with everybody, but my motives are good. Now, here's a question. Who says your motives are good?
I do.
And are your motives good? I wrote, for who? You see how sick it is? Now, we made sense. We get self-pity because things didn't go our way. Anybody else get that? And our motives were good, right? Why did they understand this? But it was our motives. And as long as they're my motives, that's my self-will. And it says most people try to live by self-propulsion. And that means the driving force of their lives are self. Now, I've noticed working with, especially in my studies, I'm studying scriptures, I'm meeting with fellow people studying that, that everybody has self-will. They just don't see it and destroy them like we do. And we're going to read on the next page where extreme examples of self-will. But I believe that all people could use the steps and work the steps and have a spiritual life. So it says, each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. Did anybody else want to run the whole show? Now, it doesn't say you want to run some of the show. And what they mean is when you wake up in the morning and you look at your day and you go around the world, whatever you're doing, you're running it. And you're reacting to everything in relation to what you want. It's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. Well, I do that. I told Clancy not to talk too long because, you know, then I wouldn't have enough time to talk, right, and Cliff, and I can't help myself, you know. Anybody else have control issues in here? I'm the only one. All right.
Not anymore.
Jimmy has control issues. Try to run the whole show, and I try to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in my own way. I did that my whole life. Anybody else do that? I always try, and I didn't even see it. It was just the way I lived. It's the water I swam in. It's the way I breathed. It was just natural for us. That's why when Bill W. says this program's simple but not easy, he says what? There's a price has to be paid. What is it? Destruction of self-centeredness. And it's very hard for a self-centered person to destroy their own self-centeredness. So how do we do that? The steps are a process of actions that allows our self-centeredness to be destroyed and God come in. Now it says, I love this, if his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. You see how insane this is? We should be locked up. If I arrange the world and people do as I wish, then everything's going to be good. And I wrote, for who? And I wrote, who says this? And it says, everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. And this is the alcoholic insanity. That I woke up every day and I thought, if I could just arrange the world and fix it just to be okay, everybody did as I wished, the show will be great, I'll be pleased, everybody will be happy. Now, I actually didn't say that when I woke up, but that's what I was really thinking. And if you took a video, we can't do it now, I'm not that sick, but if you took a video of me before I came in my head, and you played it like on one of these CBS reality shows, they'd lock me up. Would they lock any of you up?
They
the way w- the way we
s-
All right. Well, it did help. But you see, if people could see the things that go on in our minds and the way we think, if they could play it to us and we could look at it, we could say, gee, that's really insane. But probably not till we came here. We couldn't see till we could see, right? We couldn't hear till we could hear. It says, in trying to make these arrangements, so this is my favorite paragraph. In trying to make arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. Anybody wake up and going to be virtuous? Now, notice we're trying to be virtuous to arrange the world to fix me. You get it? You see how sick it is? It says, I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. Whenever I was kind or considerate, patient or generous, I was just trying to get my own way. I was just trying to arrange the world so everybody would do it. And then if they didn't do that, then I got mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. And this is how I lived, how I tried to get what I wanted. Anybody else do this? You see, it's so, you have to say, when you're reading this, you have to say, is this me? And I don't want to be this person anymore. I could still be this way today. We don't become perfect. But I've learned through the steps when I'm doing this and how I can stop. And I wrote, we're like chameleons. And it says, what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. And I wrote, he gets depressed. We get depressed, right? And I wrote, here's where we get in trouble. We're not in trouble till we get to page 61. It says, I begin to think. And I'm starting to think. And now I'm really in trouble. And what do I think? Life doesn't treat me right. I'm trying to arrange the show, the whole world, to suit me. And I have all these varied traits, and I don't think that life's treating me well. As long as we insist in making ourselves the center of our universe, it's never going to work, right? And what do we learn in AA? That our life has to be of service to God and others, and then everything works. He says, and so when I think it doesn't treat me, I decide to exert myself more. I'm going to work harder at this. I become, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. So each case is different, right? Sometimes we're very demanding, sometimes we're gracious. And sometimes we could be gracious and demanding in 30 seconds. Still, the play does not suit him. It never works. Chuck C. in A New Paragraph says, the human ego is never satisfied. Now, when you read these pages, you really have to understand that. If I continue to live the way I did, it's never going to be good. It's never going to work out. Still, the play does not suit him. Now, here's where we get really honest. Deep down honesty for an alcoholic. See how ridiculous it is. I admit I may be somewhat at fault, right? Okay, I may be a little bit at fault, but here it is. He is sure, notice the word sure, that other people are more to blame. Absolutely certain of it. And then what happens? I become angry, indignant, and self-pitying. And I wrote, this is our mantra. I may be a little bit at fault, but they're more to blame. They should be like written on our foreheads. And it says, what is my basic trouble? Now, here's four questions, and I'm going to end with this, that you should ask yourself all the time if you're having a bad day. What is your basic trouble? Are you not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Now, think about that. No matter what you're trying to do, you're seeking self. Now, Joe and Charlie made the point, and when they said it, I said, well, that can't be true. But they said an alcoholic never does anything for anyone else good unless and without their own motives, unless it's a mistake. In other words, we never do good things for other people just to be loving and kind to them unless it's by mistake. We're always doing things for others with a motive. Now think about that. Think if that's true. There's always some motive. And so ask yourself, if you're having a bad day, are you seeking for self? Are you not a victim? Now, this is the one that was killing me. I was a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction, happiness out of this world if I managed it well. Now, I suggest if you're new, you study this, and you study this with someone. A victim. You're a victim. You're being killed by a delusion, which is an idea that's completely not true. It's unreal. And the delusion was that I could be happy and satisfied if I could just manage everything. Now, this was my whole life. When I was six, I decided that if I could just be a certain way, my parents would love me. Everybody would recognize me. And I would be okay. And then when I was nine, I decided I was going to become a doctor. Because if I became a doctor, then everybody would think I'm okay. And mother would love me. So the day I graduated from medical school, and I got my degree. And I graduated with high honors. My mother comes up to me and she goes, "You know, Michael, you could have been number one." It's a true story. I love my mother. But by that time, I had no illusions. But you see the delusion? And then I was happy for a day, and then I said, "Oh my, now I have to do internship." But you see, my whole life was set about managing well so I could feel okay. Did anybody else have that? And it works, you'll have a good day. You know, it'll happen sometimes, but then if it's really good, then you'll worry about tomorrow, that it might not be good enough. And so it killed me. It killed me. I could never fix the world so I was okay. And so when I first drank or used, I said, "Wow, this makes the world okay. This is great stuff. Where's this been? I won't have to work so hard." And for a while it did. It worked, but then it stopped working. And then here's the last two questions. "Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants?" You see, people can see us for what we are. We're not very attractive people. And then it says, "Do not my actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show?" And this is where we get our resentments. We set up these people to retaliate against us, and then we get mad at what they're doing to us. And so the fourth step is where you look at what they did, and then you see how your behavior started their actions that you didn't like, and how they're just retaliating to you. "And it is not even in the best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony. So if you're having a bad day, ask yourself, if you're new, I would write these four questions out, and I would study them, and I would say, is this true? Because unless you change this, nothing's going to change." And then I'm going to finish with this. "Our actor is self-centered." Self-centered. Does anybody know what it means? Preoccupied with oneself. Remember the AA mantra, "I may not be much, but I'm all I think about"? They sing that at some meetings, I understand. That was a joke. Self-centered. Preoccupied with oneself.
Must not be, you have to tell people.
It's a tough crowd today, guys. The people are listening to the podcast. They've turned it off by now. Egocentric, thinking only of yourself. And you see, the problem is that when I live in this world where I'm the center of it, and I'm only thinking of myself, it's not a real world. Does anybody understand that? It's a world I've created. And then when I see everything, I see it out of that. So we're going to start with that. I know I blabbered today, but these four or five paragraphs, they were me, and I don't want to be this anymore. Mm-hmm. So is anybody else convinced now that a life run on self-will is never going to work? Now, on the next page, which we'll study next week, it talks about selfishness, self-centeredness, the root of our troubles. And so then, after they describe that, it says we had to have God's help. We had to stop playing God. You see how the book flows? But before you're really going to choose not to play God, you have to understand what playing God looked like. And then the fourth step, which some people think is very complicated, is just your life story playing God. And what it looked like when you came in here. And you're going to see the truth about your anger and your fear and your relationships. Congratulations again to the birthdays, and thank you.